Imagine a space for South Asian women where stories are not just told, but actually felt. This is Rue, Rising Over Obstacles and Healing, brought to you by Jyoti and Monica, two friends who set out to carve a little space and make a difference by sharing stories and fostering healing and strength within our community. We invite you to listen and reflect, finding your own path one story at a time. And just for sticking around, there's a golden biscuit at the end of each episode. So, how many of you heard "I love you, Beta" growing up from your parents as you're leaving the house or on a phone call, ending the call? I know that for me, that was not very common. And I think we used to just kind of laugh about it, that our parents have such a hard time saying, "I love you." And, you know, it wasn't until I got older that I kind of wanted to find out where this stems from, this inability for our parents to openly talk about their feelings and even just show love. And I came across this thing called intergenerational trauma. So for those of you who have not heard this term before, intergenerational trauma is a psychological and emotional wound that's passed down through generations, stemming from collective historical events and cultural values. It shows up in the descendants of those who have experienced significant hardship, such as the colonization of India by the British, partition of India, migration, and economic instability. So this trauma is not inherited genetically, but it's transmitted through a family's emotional behaviors, coping mechanisms, and unspoken narratives. So let's talk about this a little bit. And today, to have this conversation, I have Shireen again. Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Jyoti. How are you?
Good, good. So thank you for taking part in this discussion, this important topic of intergenerational trauma. Yeah. And I kind of read the definition there of what it is, and I wanted to sort of break it down. So yeah. As I see it, it's not even trauma that our parents experienced, because I think our parents came after the partition. Mm-hmm. So this is trauma that our grandparents must have experienced when the partition happened in 1947. Yeah. And I can only imagine what happens when you're displaced. Mm-hmm. Everything as you knew it no longer exists. And I know, like, my grandma, actually, my nani, she came from Pakistan. So the last time that I was in India, I spoke to her about this because I wanted to know more about what she experienced. And she was a little girl, and she remembers the train ride from what is now Pakistan to what is now India. Because as you know, Punjab was split into two.
Yeah.
So you have Punjab in Pakistan and you have Punjab in India. And my grandmother comes from Punjab in Pakistan. She had to leave her home. She had to leave her belongings. She had to leave everything and travel on this train to come to the Indian side. So she remembers all these details from having to reestablish her life and everything, right?
Yeah.
So the need for survival was probably first and foremost on her mind.
Yeah.
So this basically carried on to my mom's generation, right?
Right.
This is trauma that she inherited from her mom. And as the definition said, it's not the particular act that you inherit, it's the behaviors associated, behaviors that follow the particular event, the trauma. Those behaviors are then inherited and they pass on to the next generation, to the next generation, and onwards. So when we say, like, our parents can't say "I love you," there's a reason for that. It's because they had much, much more pressing situations to deal with. You know what I mean?
When you said the behaviors get passed down, you mean almost like the coping mechanisms to cope with that trauma as well, right?
that's exactly what I mean, is like coping mechanisms to, you know, to situations, and even like something as little as I love you. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to hear it, right? We want our parents to say I love you, but to them it's like, I'm providing for you.
Yeah.
That's an act of love.
Yeah.
I'm sacrificing for you. I'm doing all this. How do you not see that by me working hard, providing a roof over your head, providing food on your table, mm-hmm. you know, how is that not being seen as an act of love?
Right.
And I think it stems from the fact that for them, this was first and foremost.
Yeah.
Just like my grandma, you know, they didn't have food on the table.
Yeah.
They didn't have plenty of clothes. They didn't even have a roof over their heads, right?
Right.
So everything else took a backseat, and this is what they had to focus on. So our parents kind of learned from that, that by doing these things, this is showing love.
Yeah.
And then our generation's kind of starting to wonder, well, why don't you just say, I love you? Because to them, it's like, well, it's implied.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's implied through the physical needs and safety being met versus like emotionally naming a feeling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm not saying that that's right either, because I do feel that your feelings matter. Emotions need to be let out in a very like constructive way,
mm-hmm.
right? And not destructive, right? So
yeah.
you have to be able to let out your emotions in a way that doesn't hurt anyone's feelings, that doesn't make someone upset,
yeah.
or where you're not lashing out in anger. There has to be a space for sharing of your feelings and your emotions in a very constructive way.
Yeah.
And that is what we're lacking.
Yeah.
And that is where I feel that we can work on this to make sure that the next generation, our kids, don't inherit these behaviors, right?
That's right. Yeah.
When you tell a parent you're upset, the first question is, okay, you have food, you have money, your basic needs are being met. What are you upset about, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when parents ask you, you know, what are you upset about? And, you know, you don't have a response, because what they're saying is you have food on the table and all of that. But then sometimes they will genuinely try and ask you, genuinely in quotation marks, but they are like, okay, you know, tell me what's wrong. You know, I'm your friend, right? I want to know what's wrong. And so you tell them, you're like, oh, you know, this happened to me at school today, or my friend said this to me and I'm upset, or and this is why I'm feeling this way. And then all of a sudden they go, well, that's ridiculous. You should be, you should have been doing this and you should have been doing that. And they basically invalidate your feelings. And then you go, oh, okay. I shouldn't have said it, or I shouldn't be feeling this way. So yeah, I think sometimes they try too, but they would still invalidate your feelings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's because they weren't equipped with how to handle feelings, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're also a society where it's more of a collective society, if you will, as opposed to individualistic.
Yeah.
So collectively, if the family is doing well, then individually, what do you have to worry about?
Right.
Collectively, if you're in a good position,
mm-hmm.
then individually, why are you not feeling satisfied?
Yes. And that,
right?
The collective is important because of that intergenerational trauma that you were saying. Like in the past, you needed to be strong as a collective because you were displaced. So your safety and your feeling of safety and self-worth comes from those around you, how they perceive you and being liked. Because if there's a family down the road that, you know, people don't like them, they're not going to be getting as much help from others.
Yeah.
So it's actually very important for your survival back then and for our grandparents to be liked, to not be shamed, to uphold respect and honor with the family.
And to conform.
And to conform as a collective. You couldn't have someone in your family doing something that would potentially risk your survival and harm you.
Or your reputation.
Or
because then your reputation was key as well.
Yes. Yeah. And it's all linked to survival and that trauma that from being displaced from the partition.
Exactly. So yeah. I feel that instead of like blaming our parents, I think we're better served understanding where it's coming from.
Yeah.
Right. And then working on ourselves so that we're not passing this on to our kids.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Because we don't want to pass that on to our kids. And we learned that behavior growing up. There was very rarely those moments where you would approach your parents and one, ask them how they're feeling, or two, yeah, share how you're feeling. Like those were just no, that yeah, never happened.
Exactly. Yeah. And then how many of us actually remember getting the silent treatment, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because that, again, is a coping mechanism. Like instead of dealing with something that's a little uncomfortable, that's out of your comfort zone, or trying to explain something, the easy way out was to just give a silent treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, growing up, I feel like the only two ways that parents, my parents at least, like handled being upset at us was either shouting, yelling, screaming, mm-hmm, by one parent, mm-hmm, who would just get very angry, and the other parent who would give a silent treatment.
Right.
And it was like so confusing because the one who's yelling, screaming and everything is saying, well, I got it all out. So yeah, there's nothing festering.
Yeah.
But the one with the silent treatment was like, well, I didn't raise my voice. So this is a better way to deal with it because I just kept quiet, right?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, neither one of them really, if you think about it, is a good way to address something because on one hand, you're screaming, yelling, and you're angry. So that's not solving anything. And the other method, which was the silent treatment, oftentimes, like you would just go crazy wondering, like, why is my parent silent? What did I do?
Yeah.
What did I do? What did I say? What could I have done? Like, you're walking on eggshells and you're
that's
on
exactly
edge.
What I was going to say, walking on eggshells, that feeling of like, and it may not even have been, you know, you might not be getting the silent treatment because of something you did, but it could also have been something between your parents and you sometimes know that there's something going on and then you are protecting yourself by walking around on eggshells and all of a sudden one parent is being super silent and you're just confused.
Yeah. Yeah, you're confused and you just assume it's your fault.
Yes.
And you're right because you're right because I think sometimes like it had nothing to do with you. It was just the way that parent like
dealt with their emotions. Yeah.
Exactly. So how was it like in your house? Like how did your parents deal with emotions?
I think my mom was more of the stoicism, mm-hmm, you know, like appearing strong. And, mm-hmm, you know, I wouldn't often see her like showing that emotion. She's not someone to really like just cry in front of you or express mm-hmm herself in that way. So she was always a lot more stoic. And I wouldn't say my dad was more vocal at all. But I think actually, now that I think about it, he probably had ways to release his emotions mm-hmm through society a lot more easier than maybe my mom did.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was always very active. So he did like karate. He was in the national service in Singapore, which, there's a lot of physical activity there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I would say, with my mom, maybe more of that just inner calm. And then sometimes you would see them praying, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and using prayer as a form of regulating their emotions, but less so discussion about your feelings.
Yeah.
And so you were always kind of questioning what was happening. You know, was mm-hmm she feeling happy? Was she feeling sad? You didn't really know.
Yeah. I remember thinking when I was little that I'm not going to be like this. Right. I'm not going to act this way. I'm not going to handle emotions in this manner. But we're just automatically like we resort to the same thing our parents did unknowingly.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I think because you grow up around that without even realizing it, you become your parent.
Yeah.
You know, so now when I say some things to my kids, my mom will say, you sound like I used to sound, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny because I catch my older son talking to the younger one in a way that I talk to him.
Wow. Yeah.
This is why it's important for us to break the cycle, for us to learn how to properly process our feelings and not be afraid to have conversations involving our feelings with our kids. Because there are times where I resort to yelling at my kids, screaming at my kids, and then afterwards I feel horrible. And then, you know, I end up actually apologizing because it's like, wait, why did I do this?
I remember experiencing that as a child. You know, your mom will suddenly like outburst and then you're crying, but then your mom's the same person you go to for comfort. So they're like, it's okay, it's okay. And you're just confused. And I see that happen even with our generation today, with our friends and with our kids, because we're not regulating our emotions as well as we could have, or we learned that and we just let it out. Yeah. And then what we actually need to do is learn to regulate our emotions. And I do hear from friends as well of like, I'm always so angry, or I shouted at my child and I didn't want to. Mm-hmm. And we as a generation today are still unpacking that cycle. And as you said, we need to stop and break that cycle.
Exactly. So I think it starts with, first of all, holding space for yourself and having grace for yourself. So instead of, you know, we're our worst critic. So I think like the barrage of like this negative talk, right?
Yeah.
That we gear towards ourselves. I think that has to stop, right?
I love that you started that with, okay, we're breaking the cycle, and how do we break that? And essentially with ourselves first and filling our own cup first, giving ourselves grace first.
Yeah, exactly.
Because our parents were so in that survival mode that they never took that pause or that rest to fill their own cup first, you know, regulate themselves first. And then ultimately they would be even better parents. And we have that ability to do so. Yet we still sometimes struggle to fill our own cup first.
Exactly. Because again, also that sense of like sacrifice.
Yes.
It's so prevalent in our culture, right?
Right.
If you're not sacrificing yourself, you're not a good mom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true. It is important to, like you said, fill your own cup first. Give yourself grace. Give yourself that space and understand that you can change. It starts with you before you can make any other changes. You have to start with your own mindset, right?
Yeah.
And you have to allow yourself to make mistakes, but then learn from those mistakes and not look at yourself negatively, right?
Yeah.
Once you do that, then I think you have to start on this journey of like really validating not just your feelings, but your kids' feelings.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think both boys and girls were often told like, don't cry, don't talk back. Oh, it's not that bad. You should be happy. You should feel this way, right? Like the invalidation that we were talking about before of like, oh, why are you upset? You shouldn't be upset. You should feel happy that everything's fine. So that feeling of not being able to like express your emotions. So you talked about filling our own cup, but then also, how do we tap into what we're actually feeling and express those emotions in a more healthier way?
Yeah, exactly. I think first of all, you have to acknowledge that your emotions are valid.
Yeah.
And if your child is feeling angry or sad, I think the first step is to just say, listen, it's okay to be angry about this.
Yeah.
You know, you can be angry, sit with those feelings, and then figure out a way to change the situation so that you're no longer angry.
Yeah.
It sounds so simple. It sounds so easy.
When you,
but right?
I think even like the naming of the feelings, and because in the past, or with, I will just say with my parents, for example, I don't think they ever really said, I'm feeling this today. I don't think they ever expressed how they were feeling. So you were always left trying to figure it out. And that's where the walking on eggshells came from. Whereas I would think with, you know, your children who are old enough to ask you, they probably would just ask you, wouldn't they? They would just say, Mom,
what's wrong? Yeah.
And even that is, to me, breaking the cycle.
You're right.
They feel safe enough to ask you how you're feeling instead of just like hiding in their bedroom and avoiding you.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, I don't know, Mommy's upset. I better read my book, or I better just stay in my room. Because that's, I think, sometimes what we would do. We would didn't want to disrupt anyone. But they're in the living room and they're probably like pulling on your shirt, asking you what's going on.
Yeah. You know, that is, I didn't even think of it, but you're right. Even that, just the little step, something little as that, is a change.
Yeah. And how you respond to that question is the biggest cycle breaker.
That's absolutely 100% right.
Yeah.
I think having space for that and, you know, letting your kids know that it's okay for them to ask and for us to ask as well.
Yeah. And then they see that behavior modeled, like not everyone has to be perfect 100%. It's okay for mom to be upset because something happened and how you walk through that behavior yourself.
Yeah, exactly. The other one too, I think, is one way for us to openly talk about our feelings is starting to use I more so than you. Like instead of saying, you never listen to me, you know, saying, I feel unheard when we have this conversation. I feel, you know, sad that I'm saying something and you're not listening, right? So placing that emphasis on the feeling and then asking, how do you feel?
Yeah.
Right? You know, I think that's important. And it takes time. I mean, it's not something that, you know, you turn on a switch and all of a sudden we start having these conversations.
Yeah.
With our kids. But, you know, you start like one step at a time, right?
Yeah.
And I think already, I mean, our kids here, I love you so much. It's like, sometimes I wonder though, without fully understanding why our parents never said it, and then us now just saying it all the time.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's also going the other way, where instead of like having real conversations about our feelings and everything, I wonder if
like some a blanket of us statement.
Like as a Band-Aid.
Yeah, as a Band-Aid. Yeah.
Right? Like to, you know, rather than addressing whatever the root causes, right?
Yeah, that's true. Because sometimes you might be saying like, I love you, but really what you're trying to say is, I feel like I didn't get to spend enough time with you today. That's making me sad. And now I want to share how much I do love you in this moment, right? Like that's
Really
what's happening. Yeah,
exactly, right? And I think, you know, a lot of times like, you know, you may have missed your child and then, or I know that for me, sometimes like the little one will do something that really amazes me.
Yeah.
And instead of saying like, wow, I love how you thought of this solution to your problem or how you came up with this, sometimes I just catch myself saying, oh, I love you. You
know? Yeah.
You know?
We overcompensated on that word, but we also still need to truly dig into what that means.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
With the emotional, you know, suppression that our parents or our parents' parents had, that I think we found often translated into like anger as a default, right? Like frustration, anger, sometimes like criticism. And I think sometimes we are still seeing that in today's generation of those feelings of anger, especially in moments where boys maybe feel like they can't be as vulnerable. And then it comes across as anger. And I'm not too sure how we can change that narrative a little bit.
Yeah, I would say that it probably starts with letting your boys know like it's okay to have emotions and the best person to model that is the father.
Yeah.
So, right? True. Like, you know, I feel like it would have to be sort of an intentional act on the father's part to show the vulnerable side of him. To show that it's okay to have the conversation as opposed to moms, because moms are always known as emotional beings and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
I almost feel like they kind of have to take the lead on this one and model the behavior and create an environment at home where if they're feeling scared about something, because that's a big one, like South Asian men will never admit they're scared or they're worried about something, right?
Yeah.
They'll just keep quiet and they find other ways. For some of them, it's drinking. Some of them, it's other coping mechanisms as opposed to just having that conversation.
And you see that in marriages as well, right? Like, so there are a lot of South Asian men and women, I'll just include all of us, who didn't have those healthy communications modeled in like the marital home or in relationships. Yeah. And so there's often a lot of like avoidance that's happening with people as well. So instead of healthily expressing your needs or your communications, you shut down and you avoid, or like you were saying, the silent treatment. Sometimes that's not with the parents and sometimes that's with the spouse. You know, what's wrong? Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. Yeah.
And really, you are giving them the silent treatment. And I can put my hand up and say I've done that as well, of like, oh, nothing's wrong. No, nothing. Instead of like saying with the I feelings, like you were saying, like, I'm feeling this and that, and sharing how you're feeling.
Yeah. And I think when you bring I into it and you remove you, you automatically become non-confrontational.
Right.
Whereas like when you start the conversation with you always do this or you don't do this or you, you know, it becomes confrontational and the other person automatically shuts down.
Yeah.
And the other person automatically just tunes you out.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to hear what you have to say and won't work to find a solution to whatever problem or issue that you have at hand.
And I feel you need to raise that like right away almost, because if you let the silent treatment continue, then you kind of bottle up those emotions and that's when it outbursts into you instead of like if you could catch how you're feeling in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And Jyoti, in your daily life, when you're thinking of how, you know, your nanny might have been with her kids or how your parents were with you and how you are with yours, do you feel like when it comes to like naming those emotions, you're doing a much better job? And is it a very conscious effort on your part?
I'd like to say yes, but I don't think it's always the case. I think more often than not, I catch myself doing exactly what my mom did or my dad did, and I realize it after the fact. Mm-hmm. So then I have to go back and then apologize to my kids and then have the conversation. So it's a work in progress, right?
Right.
You know, working with your emotions. I don't think it's a destination that you reach at where you're like, I'm here. I'm good with my emotions and I'm great at sharing them with my kids and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's more of a journey and you learn as you go, right?
Yeah.
And you know, you adopt things as you go. So I kind of feel like I have to set reminders for myself, you know, have one thing that I've mentioned before too, that I've implemented with my kids is it's H2H time.
Okay.
And I told them whenever you have something that you want to share, it's heart to heart basically. Mm. So it's H2H time.
Yeah.
And that's when we can sit down and have like a heart to heart conversation and they can feel safe. I know whenever we've had those conversations, because I already know, because I've prefaced it in such a way and sold it to my kids in such a way that I know that at that point when we're having these conversations, my emotions take a backseat and they get to tell me what's going on. And mommy doesn't judge, mommy doesn't, you know, scream, doesn't offer up solutions right away.
Yeah.
It's just time for them to just sort of have the space to have the discussion. So that's something that I know I've implemented and I would love to, you know, rather than my kids having this time here and there.
Yeah.
It would be the ideal goal is every time to be H2H time.
Yeah. But I love that. It warms my heart to think that like now children who have a South Asian family have the space where they, like in your home, where they can just say, hey, mom or dad, I need an H2H conversation, and then be able to express themselves without that fear and without that like fear of judgment. And you also know, okay, like in that moment, you're just going to be listening and validating and you have that like heads up.
Yeah.
That is so nice to know that like kids are growing up this way today.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's a work in progress. It's not perfect and it's going to take time.
Yeah.
But I think it is important for kids to know that they can come to their parents, they can feel safe. And, you know, if they've done something that they're not happy about, or, you know, sometimes you just don't know. It could be something that's weighing heavily on their mind and they're mm-hmm. afraid to share it with you. But mm-hmm. if they know, oh, well, I know that if I share something like this, typically mommy gets mad or mommy's going to scream or she's going to get upset at me. But I have this free card, this H2H. Now, yeah. if I say it during H2H time, she's not going to do it. Let me talk to her and let me share my feelings. And that's kind of important, right? We want yeah. to know what our kids are thinking, because in this day and age, there's so many other factors involved that our parents didn't have to deal with, like
yeah.
social media, you know, gaming, like yeah. all this stuff, right? Like, because
the phones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The phones, you know. So I think it's important for our kids to have this space.
Yeah.
Right.
This is a little bit of a tangent, but I'm just thinking about the difference of how kids are growing up today and, you know, maybe how I grew up, for example. And we were talking about filling our own cup. And I think that, and this is my like hypothesis, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think that kids today have a greater ability to kind of attend to their own needs in a more independent way than we mm-hmm. potentially did growing up. And I'm thinking of one example being food. So yeah. growing up, I would say that food was often like a meal, like during mm-hmm. mealtime. So there's like rice or roti being made, and then it's put in front of you and then you eat. And in between those mealtimes, you're not able to ask for like snacks. You're not able to just like open your fridge and have like yogurt or a cheese stick or fruit, or mm-hmm. it wasn't as easily accessible.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, don't eat this because, you know, we're making roti or like food is coming. And yeah. so you're like, yeah. I feel like kids today, like they so easily can just kind of like open up the fridge, grab a yogurt, grab a cheese, yeah. grab a snack. And that's like them like fulfilling their needs, you know?
Yeah.
And I think yeah. that helps a lot with like regulation of emotions. And mm-hmm. a lot of the times, maybe people were just hungry. they're just like, I know I yeah. was.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're right. And that's the other thing too, is, you know, your emotions, like yeah. it could be, you know, lack of sleep, lack of food. Yeah. It could yeah. be, there's so many factors involved in that. Right.
Yeah. And the overstimulation growing up in households too, in the past, it was mm-hmm. always an open door, family coming in and out, multi-generational homes. Not mm-hmm. having your own private space to process your own emotions, you know, sharing a bedroom. Yeah. I yeah. shared a bedroom with my elder sister growing up. I didn't have like a private room and, you know, place yeah. to decompress after being at school or what have you. And I think today, very often, kids do have more space.
I agree on one hand, but actually my husband and I made the decision that our kids will never have their own room.
Okay.
They're yeah. going to share.
Yeah.
And it's because I feel that sometimes it can go completely the other way, where you are so closed off to the rest of the world
oh.
that you don't learn how to share.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you develop this sense of entitlement.
Yeah.
And you don't realize like how to work with one another to mm-hmm. come up with like a limited space and how to creatively use that space to the maximum.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I always enjoyed sharing the room with my sister.
Well, that's the other thing.
Like having, I think just generally like having some space to call your own.
Yes.
Now kids have more space yes. to call their own. Yes. You know, they can go sit and read in a comfy yes. chair and no one's going to really like disturb
yeah,
them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That is true, that you do get the chance to sort of process your feelings without someone coming at you every 5 minutes asking yeah. like, what the heck is wrong with you? You know? Yeah. yeah. Well, Shireen, I feel like this is a topic that we can certainly go on and on about for some yeah. time. And actually, when it comes to intergenerational trauma, this is just one part of it. Mm-hmm. There's so many other manifestations of it
right.
that I don't think we've even discussed. And
yeah.
I'd love to do a series on this, actually. So,
should.
You know,
yeah. I'd love to hear more about it. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be great to like see in which other ways this trauma shows up in our lives and what we can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say today's golden biscuit is to, if you had to just do one thing, I would say, well, one, share your feelings. Mm-hmm. And two, instead of using you, use I. That's what I would like our Ru listeners to do.
Yeah.
When you're talking about how you're feeling, and even if it's a result of what the other person has said or done to you, instead of saying, you said this to me, start off with, I feel this way because of what was said. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like it would create a space to have a constructive conversation.
Yeah.
And that's one way to start to unpack this generational trauma.
Yeah.
I guess one step at a time.
Yeah. I think even knowing that we are the way we are because of this generational trauma, and that this is how, you know, our parents and grandparents grew up, that emotional suppression happened because of very specific reasons. And we need to break that cycle and tap into our feelings. And as you said, use those I statements, I think,
yeah,
to healthily communicate how we're feeling. I think that would be the biggest shift for all of us, so that we can, yeah, break that cycle for the next generation. We're both moms, and I think that this is an amazing way to like think about the next generation and how we can break that cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you, listeners, and we'll be back next week.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Ru. We appreciate you joining us as we cultivate a community of strong, empowered women, one story at a time. If you or someone you know has a story you'd like to share, please contact us at rudaraz@gmail.com. That's rudaraz@gmail.com. Also, do us a favor and please share this podcast with your sisters, your mom, your friends, aunties, your eyebrow lady, like any lady you know. You know, you get the idea. Till next time, kush raho, be well.